The world, contrary to your belief, the world does not revolve around you.
Just her head.
The world revolves around the sun. Okay, this is it. I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye to my thinking. Now that my thinking's gone, I got nothing to say. Determination, I know that I have got to persist. Just gotta keep on anticipating, cause it's only the moment that I don't wanna miss. And what I'm trying to say, well, I don't know, but I thought it was important just a minute ago. What I'm dying to say can't even be bought, cause I lost my ticket on the train of thought.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 32 of Comic Pop Library. I'm Richard, along with
Chris,
Matt,
April,
and Logan.
And today we are going to be discussing Time Machine by H.G. Wells. But first up, we're going to be talking about omnibuses. And the one we read particularly was John Sable Freelance. At this time, we'll take a short pause for Dodge City Public Library.
Hello, and thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. As we understand, there might be some fans of nonfiction materials in CPL land, so why not head over to www.dcpl.info and check out our podcast. We have the nonfiction fix you've been looking for. Every month, Michael, our public service librarian, and I review a nonfiction book or other item for you to consider reading or adding to your collection. So, if you love the land of black and white informative materials, head on over and check us out. By the way, Michael thinks he's a different fictional character in every episode. No guessing what he'll be next month.
And we are back. We're starting today. We've had a request to look at the world of omnibuses in the graphic novel industry. What we are looking at specifically, as I said, was John Sable Freelance. The omnibus is put out by IDW. The actual writer of the series, I believe, is Mike Grill. Let me do a quick check here, guys. Yes, Mike Grill is the writer and artist for the John Sable Freelance. I picked this one out
because it's heavy.
Omnibuses tend to be heavy, no matter what they are.
No.
Well, it's kind of one of those, for the people that don't know, explain what an omnibus is, because it's not an actual bus.
No, it's not a
and
bus.
And it's not omnipresent.
No.
We are dorks.
It's a vehicle through the comical world that goes through everything of that series.
Comical?
Oh my gosh, there
you
go.
Did you laugh?
But no, omnibuses are where they collect several issues of older series and put them all in one sleeve. A lot of them tend to be in trade paperback form, and then some of them are in hardback. These particular ones, I think, are roughly 16 issues grouped together. Sometimes they're a little bit more. They are roughly, I think, about between 200 to 400 pages. The omnibuses from IDW and Dark Horse Comics also does omnibuses about the same size. They are color reprints unless the originals were black and white. And they take, whether it's a single series that has a long run, like John Sable Freelance had about 56 issues in the series. They collected the first 16 in the first omnibus. Matt is looking at Age of Reptiles, where it's a group of three miniseries, and they just put all three miniseries in one book. Logan is actually looking at a Aliens vs. Predator one, where they took a bunch of miniseries and put them together. And Chris is looking at Star Wars.
Why do we have so many?
They do these for all types of titles.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for some reason, the AVP one I'm reading, and this is very rare for him,
Aliens vs. Predator.
Yeah, AVP. Has a story that spans half the book as the very first one.
And that's sometimes they do. And like I said, the John Sable, it's the whole book, though.
I'm looking for Leia in her bikini.
Oh,
hopefully it won't disappoint you, Chris.
It does.
But the ones from IDW and Dark Horse are in color. They are trade paperback size. Just a brief mention for these two, and Logan can show these to the Matt and Chris, and I think they kind of saw this with John Sable. If you open them
too
like a regular book and try to flatten them out, the spines will pop.
And somehow the one I was reading actually got the first or third or fifth page, I'm not sure, it's odd, literally turned around that it was in the opposite side of the book.
That took talent.
This looks like the movie or the omnibus.
Please don't try and take that out. It's annoying enough as it is.
Yeah, I see what you're talking about on the page. It's like, really? How did that happen?
I know.
On the Star Wars comics.
And that was before
the movie was first.
Dang, Logan.
Look, it's killing the book over here.
I would throw this at you, but it might kill you.
It might kill the book. It might...
It's like the Star Wars comics came out after the movie because the drawn pictures looked really close to the characters that played in the movie.
They may have. I'm not sure on those, but
it has episodes 1 through 4, and when the characters change from, you know, the old Star Wars and the new one, they also change in the book. So
you mean 1 through 6?
Yeah. Sorry.
He's not up on the Star Wars.
I guess not.
Don't mess with my dad.
Star Wars.
No, there's really... Never mind.
So, more or less, the omnibuses are just collections of comics thrown into one huge
big
book.
One.
You know
Pretty
what?
Much.
So instead of having to get,
well, hold on,
you know, 15 volumes because of a comic, you can probably get one big thick one.
For a library, it would be much cheaper to buy the omnibus version of a, say, Superman that has the first comic in it through whatever. That way the people, the hardcore collectors can, you know, that get the expensive, you know, the first comic of Superman.
Well, the problem with the Dark Horse and IDW is the glue. If it gets hot and cold, you know, it's going to be expanding. And as Logan experienced when he opened it wide, it just popped the whole spine. And that's happened to a few others. And they're roughly about $25 to $26 a pop.
This one
from those two companies.
The Star Wars was almost 28.
28. And
what's a? If I'm not up on my pricing. What's a like?
If a floppy is like $3.50.
No, well, floppy, yes. Trade paperback, like we usually review, is usually anywhere from $14.99 now to $16.99, depending on the thickness.
So it price wise, they're about.
You actually get more for your money with the omnibuses.
Yeah.
But they are older stories, and some people enjoy that. It just depends on who you're marketing to. Some people don't.
I did not enjoy Freelancer.
Freelancer? Freelancer's a game.
Whatever his name is. John Sable.
John Sable. Freelance.
That's what it is.
And that one's from the 80s.
I missed that game.
I tortured the guys. They tried to read it, but that was one.
I attempted, man. I really did.
I didn't.
John Sable was a first comics production back in the 80s. I got into this because it was one of the first comics that I read that was geared for an adult. And when you read more into it, it actually has the deaths. And if they have a sex scene, they do show a sex scene in it.
You started reading this when you were 13, didn't you?
No, about 16.
Oh, okay. 3 years ago.
It's just 3 years.
Close enough.
Smidgen difference, though, in maturity level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it went down a bit.
Well, I don't know, Richard. I don't know with you.
But with the Marvel and DC, since these are two of the bigger ones, Marvel has a product called Marvel Masterworks, and they are primarily in hardback. You can get a few in softback now, and they collect roughly 10 issues. So you get a lot less, but it's in hardback. It's like Chris was saying about Superman starting with number one.
Right.
This is what they do. But you're talking anywhere from $40 to $50. A pop.
Well, you got to remember, too, for anybody that really doesn't know, DC Comics and Marvel Comics are still probably the largest comic producers. I don't want to call them comic books because they're not comic books anymore. They're graphic novels.
And movies.
And movies.
True.
They're still the largest producer of those, and probably the most popular comics are... more graphic novels are still made by them. I'm going to guess. We've
publicly recognizable.
Right, because they'll be the Supermans, the Spider-Mans, the Incredible Hawks, the Avengers.
The Batmans.
Yes, the Batmans and all them.
If Stan Lee listens to this podcast,
which
haven't seen a new character in a long time.
He's not associated with Marvel anymore, though. He got his paycheck. And
I'm just saying, if Stan Lee is listening right now, give us an email.
Yeah.
In an interview.
In an interview. Yeah. Good luck with that one, man. Good try, Chris.
But the Marvel Masterworks, they will actually are still being produced. There's about, looks like about 5 of them that'll be produced in 2013 already scheduled. One of them is a Kazar. One of them's a Jungle Adventure. One's another Amazing Spider-Man and Avengers because it's real big right now, and Iron Man. So you can kind of understand some of those. But Kazar's less known. Jungle Adventure's less known. But so far, there's 195 masterworks out there. So,
wow.
You mean, and you can pick and choose. You don't have to get all of them. You can pick the characters you like, the right. more popular ones, and put them on the shelf.
When you're saying the masterworks, though, like, say, the Superman, there may be 20 masterworks of Superman.
Right.
Because well, here, I know you got the paper in front of you. I have no idea what you're looking at.
Well, I'm just looking at Fantastic Four. There's 14 volumes right now.
Right.
Of omnibuses?
Right. Of the masterworks.
They're called masterworks for those. But yeah.
Dang.
Because you said they put how many in there? 10 to
About 10.
So 10 you figure there's 14 of them. There's 100. That's 140 floppy.
Right.
Basically. That you're getting.
At 30 bucks a pop.
Minimum.
Yeah. But now, hey.
Now, for the
positive about that is that you're getting a semi-good read and a workout at the same time.
You're listening to this and carrying these things around.
Two for one, yeah.
We can't stress enough. These things are big.
Well, no, they're not. They're maybe an inch and a half thick, but the thing is that they're made with heavy paper so that the artwork pops out.
Right.
So that's what makes them heavy.
Now, Marvel has another line called Marvel Essentials, and it's basically the same thing as Masterworks, but they're a lot thicker, and there's about 165 of these produced, and they're still producing them, but they're in black and white, so you don't get the color. You just get black and white images. So it's about 20 bucks a pop, a little bit thicker. So if you wanted to go a cheaper route, you could do that way. So Marvel kind of gives you an option. On DC, you talked about Superman. Theirs are called DC Archives, and they are hardbacks. They're a little bit taller than a trade paperback.
Are they about the same size of what a...
Like a regular size book.
Like a... Well,
almost. Yeah, maybe just smaller. Smaller.
Is that smaller than a floppy still?
It's not as little. Depth. I don't know. Do you want to call smaller. That depth? However you want to say that. They're about the same height. You
about
know.
The size of a floppy, probably.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, it's pretty close. I think floppies are a little bit longer, I guess, is what I want to say. But this is, and
about the same
this
size
one
reason.
Is the old
Batman.
Style comic.
Right.
This one, which Batman. I like that artwork.
Let me see that. Oh, it's in color? Good.
Yes, they are in color. They're hardback. All of them are. They are, like, there's several Batmans, but just Batman by itself is 8 volumes. Then they have a Dark Knight, which is another 8 volumes. Superman's kind of the same way. There's several volumes. These are roughly 3 to 6 issues. Sometimes they have a few more. And again, you're talking a higher price point. They're probably around 30 bucks a pop. They are in color, like Chris said, so that makes them nicer. To my knowledge, there are no trade paperbacks for these, though.
They're all hardback.
They're all hardback. So it's a little bit more expensive. And total of them, all total, let's see if I have that. There's 217 of them all total, if you wanted to get them all. But again, you can pick and choose. They are still being produced. They had about 6 to 8 come out in 2012. And there's, I believe, one scheduled so far that was on the books for 2013. Excuse me, 2. So they are still being produced. The 2 for 2013 are Metal Man, which is a little lesser known person, and Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman.
So far on the blocks for 2013.
What? And?
Metal Man.
Oh.
Metal Man. Now, I want to say, looking at this Batman one, it looks like, you know, the old comics I used to look at and read, it looks like it's, like, you know, almost an exact copy. Like, they just took the print
just
and threw it in the book.
Just slapped it in.
Pretty
much.
No changes. Maybe a little bit. I don't know what the production method would be. But so if you like
Batman.
If you like the older style comics.
Or can't afford the old comics.
And don't want to purchase, you know, the number one Superman that'll cost you ungodly amounts of money.
You know, there was an auction recently, and I think it sold somewhere between 800,000 and a million.
Yeah,
just
for
the
million.
Pocket change.
Okay.
Deal.
Yeah.
So how many?
Let me get out my card.
Let's do our $1 trillion coin.
So, but it is a way, I mean, it is a way to have the older style comics that people may like my age, your age, maybe introduce the younger generation into the older style comics without having to pay
a ton of money
to get the older style comic. Because I'm pretty sure they don't reproduce these in individual episodes.
Well, one of the hard parts about these, the graphic novel industry is starting to become what the floppy industry is now, where they only make so many print runs and then they're done. Same way with these. If you want some of these older books, you might have to go to eBay or Amazon, and you might be buying from a private person, and you might be spending twice as much or more depending on the book. With the Dark Horses and the IDWs, if a library has the money, I would suggest sending them to a bindery and getting them bound in a hard shell, that'll eliminate
Logan's.
You know, that book's, Logan's the only one that's read the Aliens versus Predator omnibus. And, it's, you know, the glue's already 10
to
15 wore out.
Minutes on the car trip over.
It was pretty tacky when I felt it still. Yeah. I mean, it may be something you can repair too, but it is something to be warned about.
Yeah.
On these, true, that they may be in repair, you know.
Haven't
chocolate
other omnibuses happen something like that too?
To a degree.
Just
you have to watch them. Because, like Chris stated, they're heavier paper. And because they're glued in, you know, especially if you're throwing them in the car or whatever, you got the cold, you got the heat, the glues expanding and contracting. And so all those contributing factors means that the paperback editions are going to get more susceptible to damage than your hardback editions.
Well, you should just turn into a science thing.
Bill Nye, if you're out there. No.
No, he died.
No, he's still alive.
In your heart, maybe he died.
But these are, like Matt said, great for libraries to put on the shelf. They look nice on the shelf because what we did with the Star Wars in our library, we started out with the individual graphic novels that collected the miniseries, and we had them on there, and some of those started getting worn out, so we delete some of those. But then when the omnibuses come out, we have probably about 13 Star Wars omnibuses, and they look a lot nicer on the shelf than what the thinner
5,000 floppies
right,
did.
The thinner graphic novels. So it does make your shelves look nicer, whether it's at home or whether it's in the library. Well, that's what I said. IDW and Dark Horse are roughly about the same. So those will look pretty nice together. But when you get into the hardbacks, the Masterworks are about, oh my goodness,
they're pretty big.
Probably maybe about between 11 and 12 inches tall. So they're a lot bigger. They want that oversize. That's what they started out with. So this is one option that you can start doing. And I noticed in the last previews with the Masterworks, they did have the hardback edition as well as a trade paperback edition. So it looks like Marvel's going to start publishing dual copies. So you can choose which type you want. So that'll make it a little bit cheaper on some of the smaller libraries. This is definitely not something you're going to want to buy all in one shot.
Oh, geez, there goes your budget.
Yeah. This will be something you'll pick up a couple here and there.
Well, I think it's like you said, if you get into that where you're finding you're removing some because they're worn out, destroyed.
Hardhead.
Thunk. But if you're finding that they're worn out, destroyed, and it may be cheaper to buy one of all of them and keep several, one copy of that than have to, you know, replace right, them as you go along.
If they're popular in your library.
Yeah, if they're being checked out, you know, stuff like that. But it's cool. I never knew what omnibus was until somebody said omnibus, and I went, huh.
I did.
I didn't.
Library nerd.
Her dad must be director of a library. Huh?
Makes you wonder. But so if it's in your budget, you know, the larger libraries, probably some of them already have some of these copies. Smaller libraries, pick and choose. You don't have to get everything.
Oh, Lord.
It's been in my head ever since that comment. I just had to get it out.
What?
So I was like,
we wonder why we go long. But that's pretty much it. We're not really going to get into the story of John Sable. We just want to talk about the format, how they
work.
We
don't care about John Sable.
Yeah, my heart's
sorry,
broken.
Richard.
I'm crying inside here.
Was that the Olympics or was that, what was that called?
Deadly Games.
No, that wasn't it. Something like the Olympics. Except for it had 5 games in one.
Cool.
Except for that my dad could be in the Olympics.
Who has the book?
You.
Not Logan.
She said, I've read it.
Next, Deadly Games.
I'm pretty sure it's not even in that chapter too.
She's holding it right there, Logan.
Yeah.
She's looking at it.
Come on now. Give me
sorry, Logan.
It's his origin story that it's in.
I can read.
Origin story?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's an Olympic
It's
shooter.
Even got Olympic rings beside it.
Huh, so that was his origin story?
Well, they go a little bit further in depth.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. Unless there's any other questions you guys have, I think that's about all I can
give you about it. Can we go on?
That's a good question.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Yes, we can.
I'm thinking April was bored with that one.
Oh, smidgen. But anyway, we'll go on from here. But before we do, I'd like to thank MusicAlley.com for providing the intro and outro for us today. If you're interested in indie groups, check out their website. You can download songs for 99 cents. They have a variety of music you can choose from. So go to their site, musicalley.com, and you might find something you like. And now we have Chris up with the time machine.
Okay.
I read this.
Well, it was short enough. I'd hope so. Okay. No. We're not going to start that again.
So
okay.
Proud of myself.
Well, I will tell you, this is probably the most classic sci-fi book I've read yet. This book was done, and it was published in 1895, before the turn of the 20th century. So if you were wondering how far back science fiction went, it goes pretty far back. So anyway, this book's about a guy who sort of toys around with the idea of building a time machine, and then he actually does.
Yeah.
And he has to prove it to some people just so that it's more real. You know, there's a psychologist in there, I think.
A reporter, a doctor.
So, you know, just so that they, when they see it, you know, a psychiatrist isn't going to deem himself crazy overseeing what he just saw. So he brings out this little toy replica of his time machine.
It's not a toy.
Yeah, it is. It's toy size.
It works, though.
Yes. Well, yeah, but let me get to that.
No, it's true, but it's built for a squirrel.
Yeah.
A miniature squirrel.
So he gets the lever and pushes it. And the thing disappears. And the guy's like, well, there's only one explanation for that. And that's it went into the future. And they're like, well, we want to see it again. And they're like,
we can't get it.
We can't.
Yeah.
Disappointment ensued there. So he's
yeah,
like,
this story, I was like, use your common sense now.
So here's, okay. So did they leave that day? Or did he tell them, hey, I want to have dinner tonight? Or was it some other night?
No, it was the week.
It was later on that week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he says, come over for dinner and we'll discuss more about the time machine. So they go to dinner and all of a sudden he comes in and he's all battered and beat up and just really messed up.
Looks like he's been sits down at the table. Mauled by a bear.
And right when you think he's going to tell us why he looks like that, he starts eating.
Well, you can't blame a guy. He's hungry.
No, no.
But you don't know why.
He wasn't hungry. It was the lack of meat.
Yeah, that's what it was.
True.
So,
Well, technically, no.
I get you.
We'll get to that.
I get you. I get you, Dad. I got you.
Go for it, Chris.
Oh, okay. So, anyway, I can explain this book in like 3 seconds, or you can
no, you
do
can't.
It. Yes. He built a time machine. He goes to the future. He comes back.
No.
And tells him about it.
He goes, for. First, he went a little bit. Okay, anyway. So, after everybody leaves, he goes back into his back room where he built the full-size time machine. And he sits down in it, and he has a hesitation. Because he talks about, okay, is this suicide, or am I actually going to go into the future? So, he finally decided, what the hell. Hits the lever a little bit.
There's two levers.
Yes. One for forwards, one for backwards.
Of course, Chris wasn't quoting the book there. He was
no.
I know. I'm just saying because it's something that irks me. There's not one.
Yeah, okay. Both movies it has only one. Wait, second one might have another one.
No,
they had the break.
Yeah,
that wasn't a lover. Okay, keep going.
Sorry, but as Logan interrupted and said, there are two movies that are adaptations of the book. Go on, Chris.
Okay. Anyway, so he goes in the time machine. Pushes the lever that goes forward into the future.
Can be specific answers too.
And then he stops it and he says, "Wow, I'm not dead." So then he pushes it more, and then he ends up going in the future. There was a couple of times where he kind of slowed down to see what was going on, but for the most part, he stops at 800,000 years.
No.
Okay.
802,701.
Okay, she memorized the number. Good.
Yes.
So
I got that number.
And this is where his whole dramatic experience with interacting with a species that appears to be somewhat human, but is a evolution of human, I guess. But he finds out that not everything is what it seems to be because there's these other creatures that live underground.
Adaptation of humans.
And I think in the book, does he say that they are humanoid? They just, because here's the thing.
He says
they have 8 legs or they're ant or spider like. He said both of those. One has 8, one has 6. There's a major difference, H.G. Wells.
But,
you need to make up your mind.
He also said they were lemur like.
He died in 1946.
They were lemur like. I remember that.
Which has 2 legs. So anyway, in the book it mentions spider. Anyway, they're not human. They live underground. They are, what are they called?
Nocturnal.
They're nocturnal. Well, they're called, that's what the original humans that were there that he talked to, that's what they called them, Morlocks.
Right.
They are albino. That was the word I was looking for. They're albino. They don't have good, they can't see during the outside of, they can't see in bright light lit situations. So during the day, they're underground. And I guess this is where I'm getting a little fuzzy. It's been a while since I've read this book. In the movie, the Morlocks used the species that was living on the surface as food.
Yeah.
They still do. That's what it is.
In the first one, they made their food and clothes and all that for them, too.
Yeah.
True.
Well, in the book, it never really proves that they do that. It's just his theory.
Well, he did mention seeing bones when he went down there.
Yep.
That could be a cat.
Well, he knows there's past deaths.
Well, of course not.
It's just that they don't know whether they're specifically growing them for meat or not.
The people that live on the surface are called
Eloi. They have a name.
Eloi.
Eloi.
That's right, Eloi. Okay.
And the Eloys are basically like cattle.
What was your image
of an Eloi?
Of an Eloi.
I would say stocky humanoid.
Did you think they looked like people?
I think they looked like people, but they were much shorter.
I think I was kind of imagining a...
Much shorter, much stocky.
Slightly different version of an Ewok.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Not quite as hairy.
Yeah.
See, what I got was the little guys off of the Cirque du Freak.
That if you guys possible. Read it or seen you the movie.
I don't know, but...
Cirque du Freak actually has a movie?
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome.
But it, the little guys, it's all stitched up, and it's like, he's basically a dead person, revived, but I just thought of him, but it's without.
I'd say, standing about 4 feet?
Yeah.
Between 4 and 5?
Yeah.
He equated him to looking, the statue of, I believe he compared him to a child,
right,
in the stature, as well as mentally.
Right.
A young child.
Right.
The movie screwed that up horribly.
Yes.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah,
instead they just depicted stupid teenagers.
Weena is not a love interest.
So, well, actually, I'm pretty sure he's boyfriend girlfriend, but as in father child.
I'm pretty sure she's his wife.
No.
I'm pretty sure she's his wife after a bit of a while.
Not in the book, which
yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
No,
yes,
because
the book
in the book, I'm pretty sure after somewhere around midpoint, I think
it was when
she becomes his wife.
When he saved her from drowning.
Right.
She took more of a liking to him, but he even equates it in the book to being more of the way a young child looks to a father figure.
Because she would hold his hand and she would sit on his shoulders sometimes when they were walking a lot.
Because she was tired.
Yeah, and she'd stuff flowers in his pocket.
But she wasn't a child. She was actually full grown.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
So,
but that is not
at the end of the book. That's where I kind of lean a little bit towards Logan because they allude that he goes back.
But Weena disappeared.
Yeah, at the end he goes back, but they don't say where though.
And when
because it just disappears, and that's the end.
And when Weena,
in my head, it's like he goes back and gets with Weena.
Wow, that sounds like he doesn't even love her at all. Just use her. No, anyways,
what
when they were
okay.
Let me explain.
Go ahead.
When they were in the forest at night and they built a fire, the Morlocks came because the fire kind of gone out or something like that.
Right.
And all of a sudden there's this huge fire, like a forest fire. And he said that he lost track of Weena and she disappeared. So we don't know if she survived or not.
Right.
That's right.
He's got amazing time.
I was thinking
he can go
of the movie.
To a bit. A few hours early, her go to where they were coming out, just hide in the shadows.
You know what? That
probably
would
be
with
point. There'll be two of them.
Take
time
down
paradox.
The Morlock that's kidnapping Weena and just
very well with him.
But it wasn't enough visual descriptions in the book, so we revert back to the movie a lot for how everything looked. And we're kind of crossing them a little bit.
I don't.
It's easy.
I hate them.
Makes it easy to cross.
When did that happen?
Because at some point, you haven't mentioned yet, the time machine gets stolen. That's why he's like stuck there. And that's when all this drama happens with Weena.
Well, the whole thing is the time machine, he can see where the time machine was drug off.
Right. He sees tracks where it was dragged.
I was going to say dragon.
Dragon took it.
It was drug off. It was behind these doors. He was basically looking for rudimentary tools to force the door open.
Like a crowbar.
Right. Yep. Something that...
Which is what he had until he lost
he, it. And he brings up the point that he was completely unprepared for his trip.
Oh, definitely.
So
he had like it, a it couple matches you, in well, his pocket.
It makes you wonder, too, when actually, you're talking about the end.
Well,
did he
really plan on getting off of the time machine? Or did he just want to...
Chill out.
Okay, Richard has gone off the deep end.
Richard's all rolling right, around on the just, floor laughing.
Just keep going. Come on.
I'm sure part of our audience is too. But anyway, did he actually plan on leaving the time machine?
Much better phrased.
There you go.
Not necessarily to that extent.
Because to me, it sounded like it was more of a tour he was taking. He didn't like plan on any,
one.
There you go.
I don't know. He wasn't expecting a full-blown expedition.
Technically, it could be only like a 5-minute tour.
True.
But anyway, he finds his time machine eventually. Won't go into how he does that because we're taking too long.
Really?
Huh?
But
we've took longer than this before.
Anyway, he gets his time machine. He goes into the future some more. And April, you know the number?
800 to 2,700.
The one after that. He goes farther into the future.
Oh, yeah, it's with the big crabs.
It was over a million, wasn't it?
What's that?
It was over a million, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And for some reason, I think the one I read didn't have this much detail in it.
Well, a lot of it, the detail you had to fill in yourself. That's what Chris said earlier.
No, crabs non-existent type detail.
Well, he calls
them like a giant crab.
Yeah, he talks about
like
fighting.
Were.
Yeah, like a big lobster crab thing.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It was missing.
But the point was is that no humans existed.
Hmm. Yeah.
April read the same one you did.
Which one?
Time machine.
No, which
one? Oh, get it. I have it.
But
no, I didn't. I read it from that big book of
I was in there, too.
Ones.
I read that one. It was in there.
Huh.
Hey,
that's
you should
all right.
speak.
Okay.
Your brain
Logan just lost all his cred. He can't keep us straight anymore.
I'll keep you straight because I read it.
Well, just to go back to him with his...
That's fine.
Finding stuff out. He was doing all this theorizing. It's like he was a piss poor scientist because almost everything he would say, well, they were doing this because of this and this. He was completely wrong.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was like, golly.
Well, you got to remember, this was written in 1895.
Right.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I got the year right. I mean, did we even have cars?
No. If we were, it's just the beginning stages.
But see, I thought it was like...
I'm sure there were cars. They just weren't mass-produced like
yeah,
Ford.
Yeah, there might have been a few. So this book would be way unbelievably futuristic for the time it was written. And you got to put your mind kind of in that time, that era of time.
You know, it's funny. I think he was thinking only 50 years into the future.
He may have been.
But then I mean, as far as when the majority of the story takes place, and then he built his time machine and then goes into the future even further.
Right.
True.
So.
What? I don't know. Oh, what was I going to say? Oh, this book isn't really a hardcore science fiction, though.
Why not?
Not compared to today's standards?
Because it's more of an adventure.
It's like fantasy.
And so the only part where it goes into the science part really is
when the time machine.
Is when he explains the time machine.
Which, if
the
you can get first,
but he was into philanthropy.
It becomes really interesting.
He was into philanthropy when he went in and was learning about the people of the new time. There's science in there too. There's biology.
Yeah,
he talks about flowers,
but it's not blatant. Like when he explains
how the time machine works.
Yeah,
anthropology.
It's like
that's what it is.
It's
not philanthropy.
He was just sitting over here staring. He's like, I will figure this out.
I know what he's talking about. What is that word?
Anthropology. Sorry.
Speechcraft?
I don't know. Though one thing we did mention, the movies, I want to make one quick mention. The one that was made in the 60s
was probably
a better adaptation than the one that was made in the
2000s. I agree with that. Here, hang on a second. Let me look it up.
Because it's more close.
You didn't bring the tablet?
To the book.
And something odd.
I had ate dinner.
The 60s one had just eternal blonde-haired teen people with same language and everything.
The movie definitely puts a different twist on it. It's more of a they kind of play on the nuclear holocaust in that one. I remember that. Where it's actually, according to IMDb, it's 1960 and 2002.
2002 is a new one.
Yeah.
Yes.
That one I haven't seen.
And the 2002 it's been gone so far, they're now Native Americans instead of...
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Logan, put your face to the mic.
And then, like Logan said, the first one was more of the teen scene type deal, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
What? Everybody was from...
And they spoke in English. That's what threw me.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the book, they spoke a broken language, but he eventually was able to catch on to the words.
He said it was a very simple language.
Just a very couple words, though. Like some of the stuff he didn't get. Like
He was learning the language, not very good at it.
So anyway.
In the second movie, they had a different language, but they still taught English.
Because they thought of English as like a rock language or a stone language. I can't remember what they said. But.
Yeah, rock language because they had the rocks with it on it.
Correct. So to wrap this up, if you will, after he visits a million years in the future, he goes back. And then that's when all this is taking, as you're reading this story, it's all him telling his story over dinner. So, but a million years is as far into the future and he goes when he comes back. And that's it.
The ending is open to interpretation.
A lot of it.
Because he's been missing for 13 years and it's just.
Yeah.
Right. After dinner, he gets back on the time machine and he disappears and that's.
Yeah.
And that's the end of it.
And we never know their names. We only know Philby's name and that's it. In the whole book. Because he was known as the time traveler, and then there was the doctor.
The time traveler.
I never thought of that.
Would have called him.
They never really give any names characters.
Yeah, it's just the person's point of view's name is the only person we get.
Well, my guess is that he just went out, met these people, and says, here, come here and tell me I'm not crazy when I show you this time machine. Like the psychologist.
Philby, he
just
knew.
Went out real quick, came back, and said, here, witness.
It's like remember. He at least looked for the right.
You know what? Those are the
signs.
But
the book is written in the point of view of
Philby.
Right. Who was the psychiatrist?
He was Porter, a young gentleman.
Yeah, he was a young gentleman.
I don't know if he ever said
he didn't really have a job that we dictated.
But the book is written in his point of view of what happened and the story he was told.
Yeah.
And he simply called him the time traveler.
He called everyone by kind of like what their job was.
Yeah,
I think he just went to this party and says, hey, come to my house. I want to show you something.
Well, see.
I don't know you, but okay.
Sounds like most of them he went to the university.
But Philby, he knew as a friend because when he first arrived at the house, he was a bit late. And the maid was like, oh, you know your way around. Just go on it.
Yeah, so it's definitely interesting. It's definitely a classic. Man, I'd hope your library has it.
I would say, I don't think there are too many big words in there. I would say junior high.
You don't know the classes of America.
It'd probably be a little dry.
Well,
it is
a little
bit of a slow read.
But it's a short book.
Right.
This would be a good first critical thinking exercise.
Well, that's my thing on it. Some of the concepts that are in that might be a little hard for junior high to
don't know because it doesn't April said it doesn't really get into the science.
I think the only really difficult part they're gonna have other than the old school writing, like it's old school, you know, and it has weird spellings of stuff, but the bump in the road is when he is just explaining it to them at the very beginning of the book, and then from there it's pretty fast and it's more of an adventure than science.
Well, that's what I said. If you can get through the first couple chapters,
it's pretty good.
They would enjoy it after that. It's getting through that first science part of it, I guess.
And most of these, this would probably be found in a collection for the most part in most of the libraries. But we did go through, and this year we replaced some of the stuff, like I mentioned before. Holy kiloli. How would you pronounce that?
Let me see. Let me see. What is it?
Well, Richard has The Time Machine
as just
paperback,
one book.
Kind of one book. Chris, the core copy you have is
part of The Wheels of Chance.
Toss it over.
I don't know.
It's part of Wheels of Chance. Yeah.
Toss it over.
Which I'm not sure.
You don't know how to pronounce words anyways, Logan.
It was The Time Machine. What's in the other one, Chris, with that?
Prohibticon.
Is it Wheels of Chance and Time Machine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this one I got, Logan probably came the closest with Prohibticon Publishing. They published a real thin book of just The Time Machine.
And it's got a cool cover.
$5. So if, like Chris was saying, if you wanted to give it to a younger kid, and it was 2010 pub date, so it's fairly recent.
Yeah, because we had this other book.
Giving them this thin book rather than a collection of stories.
Yeah. We had
even
the collection.
Even though it's a small story, they see that big book and they
like,
put that block
it.
In their head. Where you give them this, they're like, oh, that'd be easy.
Yep. And H.G. Wells was from Great Britain.
Yes.
Or United Kingdom.
Yep.
So it does have that English accent in some of the words that are in there.
Yeah, that's why it's like, and it's because of how old it is, it's written really, really proper.
Right.
And so some of that's kind of hard to get around
Like a scholar or an aristocratic person. Yeah.
This was after we actually read the book, but just real quick aside, we were talking about the movies and the book, and we were like, well, this is the Doctor. And then Logan was like, no, he's the first Time Lord. Not the Doctor, but the first Time Lord.
Maybe he's the Doctor's dad.
The Doctor's dad.
Wow.
He just had to throw like that in there. I thought that was pretty
cool. What they should do. They should, like, just on Doctor Who, just throw in an H.G. Wells thing. Just like,
you know what?
That would be awesome.
There was no paradoxes in this book.
No. Usually something with time travel.
Well, he went far enough into time that, well, who's to say one of the Eloi was his kids? Great.
Hey, they're all related.
You can't count that many greats.
One of his kids? Wow.
He's descended somewhere in there.
We stopped every 20 years.
He's your father's uncle.
Who are you?
I am your father's cousin, uncle's brother's former roommate.
There you go.
I like the booty call aspect, though. Maybe every 20, 40 years. Oh, it's time to stop.
Well, when you say that in the 1960s version of the movie, he was, and he did stop once in that one because his house got boarded up or something. I remember that, where he was watching the changes in the outfit, and he was going, how far is this going to go?
Because the dresses kept like getting shorter, you know, with the style. My gosh, legs.
Did he like grow a mountain around him or something?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, in the movie, you got to remember, in the movie, they played on the whole, the 1960s version, they played on the whole nuclear holocaust, and it was more or less World War III that forced half the people underground and the ones that stayed on the surface and
fried.
No, they survived
somehow.
They became
apparently
the
Eloi.
The Murloc.
And the ones that lived underground become the Morlocks, and the sirens would go off and the people would just go there thinking
like zombies.
And that's how they got their food.
One of the weird things, like how he was telling them the story, well, that's all cool and everything, but a really easy way to prove it is to get on the machine with him and just go.
Yeah. It was only built for one.
Oh, bull crap. You can fit people onto there. You've never seen teenage girls fit in a car.
It threw him off balance, because then one time he was sitting there.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't sitting in it properly.
Yeah, see? And if you put another person in it.
He didn't have his seatbelt on.
Something that was awesome, but nowhere near the book in the second movie. Just because it was awesome. In the second movie, Morlocks were genetically engineered species from the psychic blue skin.
The 2002 version
kind of
is
like the Stargate Atlantis vampire thingies.
Kind of something.
It kind of reminded me
of the Firefly Weavers.
Yeah.
Oh, another one.
Not quite that bad. No.
The one that was controlling them with the long white hair reminded me of the people off of Hellboy 2.
The elf people.
If you want to, I'm going to say, even though it's an older movie, if you don't want to read the book and you want to watch the movie, watch the 60s version because it is a closer adaptation to.
Even though it's cheesy.
That newer one just sucked compared to the book.
It's Jedi in it. Evil Jedi, but it had Jedi.
It's not a very good representation of the book. So.
What was that, Logan?
The second one had Jedi in it. Evil Jedi, maybe, but Jedi.
Where?
Doesn't matter.
Morlocks.
Yeah, the Morlocks geneticist engineer people.
Yeah, it was definitely not as good. So
the guy you compared to the Elf King people?
Yeah.
I remember how it went boom.
He had some psychic powers, too.
Oh. Use the force push.
Please
so
have.
We'll say, most libraries don't have this. They should. It's just a standard.
It'd be good.
Good read, though. I think people would enjoy it if they like sci-fi.
Unless there's anything else, Chris.
Or fantasy.
I don't like sci-fi, and I enjoyed it.
Or adventure.
Yeah, I think it'll fit to a wide range, so I think we're good.
It's cool.
All right, so we'll wrap it up this time. We have no emails, like we said, Chris said, and Matt. If you don't have the book, Time Machine, probably ought to get it there. For your libraries with omnibuses, pick and choose what you like and see if they'll work for your library. Next up, when we come back for episode 33, we will be reviewing the movie Looper and the la la la.
Artist.
He's like,
I'll will be debut.
Stop talking to him when he's trying to talk. He's just.
When he's trying to think of what to say next.
Yeah, it's like, yes. You can't talk to him when he's forming a thought. It just explodes.
Oh, my God. For episode 33, we will be reviewing the movie Looper. And we will also be looking at the album coming out by Ollie Murs. So join us again next time. Had fun. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
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 I can see it all so clear. Please believe me, I really had something to say. But now it's bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any comic book publisher or distributor and is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show host are their own and are not reflective of any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.